But you're at a different level than the majority of people.
Yeah.
Online or offline.
Right.
Now, what would you do as far as going and finding somebody? You just kind of hit on something here where I've read some of the joint venture literature, you could call it, I suppose, out there, and some of the suggestions is to make a list of all the e-zine owners that you know and send out just a cover letter to, let's say, for example, you've got 100 people on your list. So you send out a letter that says, here's my joint venture, you know, to the list as a block. What you just said is that you actually talk to someone individually. You pick an e-zine or a potential partner, you study their writing, and then you write directly to that person. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. Actually, I choose not to write if I can avoid it. I like to pick up the phone and use the phone. Email has been beaten to death. I have a filter in my email that totally, believe it or not, ignores the subject line, joint venture opportunity.
Oh, yes.
Because I get bombarded with them all the time, and if I was to do every one of them, my list would be so exhausted and so annoyed with me that they would just wouldn't make the slightest bit of sense. And plus, a lot of them that are scripted that way are just plain garbage.
Right. Yeah.
And this isn't being harsh. This is just, you know, it's a matter of ignorance, and there's a lot of misinformation that goes on around out there about joint ventures where people are like, oh, you just need to, you know, load up a list of, I know one particular infamous young marketer who last year sold a list of everybody who contributed to his book, and I was one of them, so put your two and two together and figure out who it was.
Yeah.
He sold, when he was getting desperate and losing his reputation, he sold a list of everybody's name who contributed to him. And the amount of emails I get where somebody says, hey, you know, I want you to do this, or I know that you contributed to this book. Will you contribute to my book?
Yeah.
I know people are using this list, and they don't know me personally. They haven't built a relationship. And I really, in my course, Joint Venture Secrets Revealed, I encourage people to build a relationship or to only work with people that they have an existing relationship with. And I'm going to tell you about later on about how I learned that the hard way, and how learning it the hard way actually turned out to be really profitable for me.
Okay.
But you really only want to work with people you build a relationship with, and the way you build up a relationship is not an email. It's on the phone. It's face-to-face. My good friend Sean Casey, who's a partner in a business venture, Sean actually flew out. He got on a plane and flew out to Lincoln, Nebraska, the middle of nowhere, to meet with a company that he wanted to work with. And everybody wants to work with this company, but nobody got on a plane except for Sean.
Right.
And Sean works with them to this day, 4 or 5 years later.
Exactly.
And it's brought him several $1 million into his business over a four-year period. It's only because of that willingness, that innate understanding that or maybe it's not innate. Maybe it's something that needs to be beat into your head, so I'm going to say it here. You have to pick up the phone. You have to go face-to-face and meet with people.
Right.
I do disagree with the thinking out there that you can just load up a set of names and mail it to everybody. You know, every once in a while, one of those will get through. Maybe it was worded differently, and maybe, you know, the offer sounds okay, and it'll get through, and I might actually consider taking part in it, but rarely.
Yeah.
You know, joint ventures that I do are normally done with people that I know,
yep.
And people that I could trust. I'll do joint ventures when people I know and trust refer me to someone, and that's where I've even gotten burned in that, and so did the person who referred it to me. So, we could talk about that also if you want.
Sure. Yeah. Well, why don't we? Yeah, we can kind of jump right in. Maybe you can tell me about your very first joint venture. How did you find somebody to work with, and how did that play out?
All right. Well, as I was talking about, when we first rolled out our members-only website, the Ultimate Marketers Resource, back in the fall, our goal was to grow to 1,000 members within the first year. It's not a very lofty goal. At that time, we weren't charging a monthly price. It was $50 to join, and, God, 1,000 members paying you $50 really didn't seem like very many.
Yep.
And in order to meet that goal, we spent a long time cultivating relationships with other marketers who had email lists. And we thought that their customer base was our target market. Mm-hmm. So we would get a couple of deals going, and we would offer them a 50-50 split. And some of them did okay. Some of them were, you know, we had a couple of trickles here, a couple of trickles there. But it was never what I had expected. And this was after I had already paid Mike Enloe for consultation, and I couldn't go back to him and say, what did I do wrong here? So I really needed to think about you know, why this wasn't producing the results I wanted. I mean, some of the joint ventures weren't bringing in anything.
Yep.
And I'm thinking to myself, all right, well, I have to be pretty harsh. Does the copy suck?
Yeah.
Is the offer not targeted right? Is there not a sense of urgency? What is going on? I had to think all these things. And Terry and I, we realized that, you know, we were maybe too wrapped up in it, and we needed to get away. Like, at that time, we were living in a one-bedroom apartment, and we were living pretty close to the university where we had both gone to school. And we decided, okay, let's go. Let's leave the apartment right now. That's where all the business took place. That's where every day, we saw this every day, and we were just tired, and we needed to get away and think differently. We went to our university, and we sat down, and we began to brainstorm everything that we were doing and everything that we thought was either going wrong or going right. And it led us, we were putting, you know, we had all these charts, and we were kind of with pros and cons of what we were doing good and what we were doing bad. And then we started to realize that perhaps our target market was wrong. Our target market was marketers and small business owners who needed these marketing resources, but that going to other marketers, that perhaps, you know, either their sphere of influence wasn't as big as we thought, which I think you'll find out a lot online, is that people make bigger claims than they really should.
Yeah.
And we also realized that they may not have the kind of customers that we really, A, want, or B, if they a lot of people told us they couldn't even afford $50. Now, that's not the kind of customer you want. If they can't afford a low-priced product like that, how are they ever going to buy back-end products from you? And that's the only way a business survives, by selling to the same customer base over and over again.
Right.
So we realize that what we need to do is start thinking outside the box. I realize it's cliche, but it does make sense in this case. We thought that we need to find a different partner, somebody who has our target market. And we began to brainstorm who has that target market. So we came up with a list, and the list included ISPs, web hosts, and merchant account companies. So we said, okay, ISPs too general. You're going to hit a lot of people who aren't the slightest bit interested in marketing. Cross that off. Mm-hmm. Website hosts, possibility. And at that time, we had a host that we've been with for over a year, so we decided to contact them. And we also had a merchant account provider who had been processing our transactions for over 4 years. And we were all pretty happy with them. As a matter of fact, we knew both the owners of those companies pretty well, which is important. It goes back to my building a relationship. So I felt pretty comfortable calling up both of them. Again, this is the decision maker in the company. Very important you get them and you don't spend your time talking to a programmer or somebody who doesn't have the power to make a decision.
Right.
I called up both of them, and the owner of the web host company was very hard to get a hold of. The guy used to work very strange hours, and I was trying to call him at like midnight to put this deal together, and we would go back and forth, and he was very busy. So we put that one on hold and began to focus on our merchant account company.
Uh-huh.
And I called the owner, and he was the owner of an e-commerce exchange service provider in the New York area. And it was a fairly big one. I mean, they had pretty much most of the merchant accounts in the Northeast area, which includes Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New York and New Jersey. So he said he was really interested, and like a good marketer, he said, but I can't endorse something that I don't know if it's as quality as you say it is. I assume it is,
yeah.
But let me see it. So we prepared a complimentary membership for him. We presented it to him, and he said, would you mind if my new VP of business development took over from here? So we said, sure.
Beautiful.
We began to build a relationship with the VP of Business Development. And one day in February, I remember getting a call, and he said, Mark, we're very interested, and we would like to position this to our list. But we have several different segmented lists. One is just general merchant account customers, and one is a joint venture that we built with another company where we provide the merchant account for people who are going to be selling electronics online, and they seem like they'd be the perfect match for you, but we want to test this. So I spent a lot of time crafting what I thought was a killer email. We sent it back and forth. We agreed on a split, and I think at that time they were even receptive to 35% at that time. They didn't even want the 50-50. They wanted to test it and do their. So I wasn't arguing.
Yeah.
And we did a joint venture, and it the results amazed me. Within the first day, we had brought in $10,000.
Oh my!
That was my first taste of greatness.
Now, what was this product that you were doing at that time?
It was the same Ultimate Marketer's resource. It was a marketing directory with a couple of. At that time, we had started to add a couple of tools to it, and at that time, we had just converted over to a monthly membership model, where it was we went from $49.95 when we started offering software, and our bandwidth went through the roof. We had to raise the price, so we settled on $19.95 a month. So. And we had a couple of different pricing options. So there was like people could buy for 2 years, people could buy for 1 year. And we did this joint venture, and oh my God, they were coming in gangbusters. They were people were taking us up on the 2 year option. So that was like a $300 sale in one shot. And we did really well. And then within the first month, we brought in $50,000. Remember, this is a consumable, a monthly rebilling product.
Right.
So these were. Some of those were going to stay, and we have a pretty high retention rate, 70-80%. So we knew that the next month we were going to see similar numbers, and they were very happy. They were extremely happy, especially when I cut them their check for 35% of that. They were probably thinking, oh, we should have done 50-50, but
exactly.
They had agreed on it. And, hey, I was already paying them a ton of fees anyway into the merchant account, so they were making out like a bandit either way you look at it. And eventually that just kind of snowballed, and this happens also in successful JVs. Eventually the other divisions of their company started to hear about this, and they got interested, and they were like, hey, we want a piece of that. So one e-commerce exchange division in Orange County, California, contacted me on their referral and said, we want a piece of this too. Is it okay if we mail to your list? And whenever somebody contacts you and asks if it's okay if they endorse your product to their list, I think you know the answer to that.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
It was a
no-brainer.
Right. It was a very successful joint venture. It took us, I would say, about 6 months for it to all peter out. So 6 months of paying them. There was some residual money we paid them for almost a year afterwards, and it was very successful all around. And it was my first taste of the power of joint ventures, and it's really when I decided to put everything else to bed and focus all my energies on that.
So is that the kind of the project that propelled you to the level that you are now, or was there something else that happened after that?
Well, no. Actually, shortly thereafter, maybe a year later, we had been doing joint ventures. This was the market technique we were focusing on, and we went out to a seminar in Las Vegas, and we're just sitting there listening to somebody speak, and I can't even remember who it was now. It might have been Yannick Silver or somebody else speak, but at that time... We were friendly with Yannick, and we had done a couple of things with him also that were pretty successful at that point.
Uh-huh.
And we were listening, and something just clicked. And we said, you know, nobody's ever written a book on joint ventures, of course, on joint ventures. We should really do that. And we should include case studies, our own case studies as well as case studies of others, so we get a different worldview of joint ventures that have worked, and position it out there along with our own commentary and summaries. And as soon as we got back from the seminar in Las Vegas, we started working on this. We contacted all of our list of contacts, and that's another thing. I'm a relentless networker. I network with lots of people, and I maintain their names in a Rolodex and always try to keep in contact with them, and that's something I encourage everyone else to do. If you want to be a joint venture deal maker, you want to use joint ventures, you better learn to pick up the phone and learn to communicate. And my father calls it schmoozing. And maybe it's the New Yorker in me that does it, but I have no problem going out there and doing this sort of thing. So we started calling our network of contacts and getting them to contribute to this book, and then the rest is history. The book became really successful, and I could talk about a couple of great joint ventures that we did for this $97 book.
Yeah,
if you like. Okay, we about 2001, 2002. Someone from a very famous publishing company who I'm going to keep their names quiet because I don't want everyone bombarding them.
Sure, absolutely.
But they're a very famous marketing publishing firm, and they publish a lot of wealth-building, financial, and health-oriented newsletters, and they publish both online and offline.
Uh-huh.
Multi-million-dollar direct marketing business. And they contacted me and said, Jay Abraham is putting on a free conference call worth $500, and we would like to buy an ad to mail to your list. Now, I have a little strategy that I call Godfather marketing. If anyone's ever seen The Godfather, it's one. I think it's a great example of marketing.
Uh-huh.
And there's a scene where someone asks, the Godfather does a favor, and he says, "What can I do to repay you?" He says, "Nothing, but one day in the future," and I'm an amateur impersonator, "one day in the future I'll come to you, and I'll ask you to repay me, and at that time you should remember what I did for you."
Yep.
Now, I, not being Marlon Brando, but I said to myself, this is a great opportunity for me to get in good, not only this company, but with Jay.
Right.
So
yeah.
I said, you know what, we charge $300 to send a mailing to our list at that time. I said, I'm not going to charge you a penny. I love Jay. I think his stuff's great. I have courses of his from years ago. He's one of the few people that I think is really on top of his game. And I'm happy to promote this to my list. And they were like, that's fantastic. What do you want in exchange? And without, you know, sans Marlon Brando voice, I told them, you know, I don't know, nothing now, but sometime in the future I'll come back to you guys.
Beautiful.
So we ran the ad. From what I found out, it was very successful. And they were very grateful. And they said, whenever you need something, just come back to us and we'll remember you. So the joint venture Secrets Revealed was selling, was starting to sell. It was doing really well. I'd done a couple successful, really successful joint ventures with Phil Wiley and a couple of other people. I knew the sales copy was kicking butt, and I knew this was a great time to approach them. So I approached this major publishing company, and I said, now is the time I'd like to call in a favor. Would you review my book and see if it's something you want to sell to your list? So they did, and the next day I got a call from the president of the company who tells me he loved the course, they love joint ventures, when can we do this?
Beautiful. Now, is this something you've done, is this an e-book or is this a printed book?
This is an e-book. We sell it as both an e-book and a printed course. People can find out about it at jvsecretsrevealed.com.
Okay.
And it really kind of covers my entire JV theory within this course, as well as, you know, a bunch of case studies from people and ideas on how to become a JV deal maker, just contracts, agreements, and forms, a lot of things in there.
Beautiful.
They really loved it, and they thought that their list would like it too. So they are very scientific direct marketers,
uh-huh.
And they wanted me to set up 5 different websites for them, landing pages that people could come to, so that they could track. They were going to, you know, market to different segments of their list, and I started to figure it out. They segment their list based on, where they live.
Right.
You know, there was like one set was international, one set was the West Coast of the United States, one set the East Coast, one set the North, and one set the South, and they were, and I could tell that by, you know, the way the sales started coming in and how they tied out to this. It was very interesting to watch them work. Anyway, when they first started mailing out, we got slammed with orders, $15,000in the first day. When all was said and done, the smoke was cleared, this thing produced at least after refunds and chargebacks, the false orders, because they get that as well as everybody else, at least $22,000 in sales.
Beautiful.
They were happy. They were really happy. Now, mind you, this is a big company who does millions of dollars in sales. So they were, you know, while this might sound impressive to a lot of people, they were happy, but they weren't thrilled. They weren't blown away. They were used, you know, they've done joint ventures that brought in $100,000 in a couple of days' time. But okay. They were still happy, and they said, let's do this again in a couple of weeks. So we repeated it again in a couple of weeks, and it brought in more money. And in last year, I sent them so much money last year that they were very happy. Now, we are at the point now with this publishing company where we have a great relationship with them. They helped me broker my current deal with Jay Abraham, and they're some of our biggest supporters, and we theirs. I've sent customers their way who wanted to do joint ventures that weren't appropriate for my list but were appropriate for one of theirs, and it's just been a really successful, mutually beneficial relationship. And that's what I really want people to get out of that, not so much the money, but the fact that it was long-term. I didn't do, and there are some marketers who they'll do a joint venture with you, and even if it's successful, that's it.
Yep.
That is your one shot. And the reason they don't want to do it again, and I can't understand why, but I believe in long-term relationships, and so do they. So it's really turned out to be great.
That's fantastic. Now, it sounds like all the joint ventures that you've attempted or that you've done have been successful. Have you had any flops at all? Or
I've had tons of flops.
Can you fill us in on some of those ones?
Sure, absolutely. It's funny. A lot of people come to me, and they're really worried about contracts with joint ventures. They really think they're scared, and they think they have to enter into a contract. And I have to tell you, other than my joint venture with Jay Abraham, every contract joint venture that I've done has been a flop. And every handshake joint venture that I've done has been fairly successful.
Wow.
What I mean by that is a lot of times a contract is too daunting for most people, and if somebody is really insisting that you have a contract and it's not written up as what they call a gentleman's agreement, where you outline the roles of each party, mm-hmm. and everybody signs it, that to me that's more appropriate, and that's really the kind of deal that I have with Jay Abraham right now.
Right.
But an ironclad contract that insists that somebody can you know, take your business down if this joint venture doesn't work, but this one's protected and it's covered by the laws of the state, of the country, and all these legalese terms, those usually end up in very bad states for me, and I don't know why that is, but I have a theory, and my theory is it relates to something that the great mail order marketer Jim Straw says, and that's that, you know, if you have to have a contract that insists that you're you know, you're covered and you're acting as if you don't trust the person from the start, then chances are you're a person who can't be trusted yourself.
All right.
And you're putting that, you're projecting, to use a psychology term, you're putting your own belief system or your own feelings on them. And that's the wrong way to enter into agreement. I'll tell you specifically about JVs that have flopped. Someone contacted me and they had written a book on how to run a successful golf tournament.
Uh-huh.
And book was really interesting. I had no idea about this niche. I just had no clue that people made money from running a golf tournament. But then, you know, he showed me, he had gotten this information from the public domain, and he had compiled it, and it was really a great product, but he had no idea how to market it.
Right.
So he said, I said, great, so what do you want? He's like, I want you to market it. I want you, you know, to put up a website and apply your expertise to making this thing work. I'll let you collect all the money, and you send me my cut. And I said, sure. So it's going to be a 50-50 split, right? He said, no, actually, it's going to be 75-25 my way.
And you're doing all the work.
Yeah, and I'm doing all the work. And all he did was come up with the content, which he got from the public domain anyway.
Right.
But I said, okay, we'll try that, but I reserve the right to negotiate this later.
Uh-huh.
And he drew up this contract, and the contract was really kind of daunting, like I talked about. But I said, okay, I got really nothing to lose. You know, we have a successful business already. And if this thing flies, it flies, and we'll renegotiate. And he had agreed to that.
Uh-huh.
So we put up this website. I took the sale letter he had written and rewrote it, and we focused on a niche of nonprofits and what are they called? Chambers of Commerce.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, chambers of commerce all over the world are huge into golf tournaments. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so you know that was our target market, was going after these people who would buy this course, and then I said, you know, we really need some back end, like either you consulting with them, because apparently he told me he had run some successful golf tournaments, so he knew what to do. And I said, you know, maybe like some $5,000 consultant or something along those lines. And he said, this sounds great. We had this whole strategy planned, and it was working really well for a while. We bring in the money, and we would cut him his check for 75% after we, you know, covered our merchant processing fees and whatever expenses we had. And it was working really well. The thing was selling, and something he had done, I forget, at the time, he had used some search engine technique for the domain he had at the time, and it got him listed very high in the search engine. So that used to produce some money, and when I tweaked the sales letter, it started to make even more money. So this was really becoming a successful product in a great niche that nobody else was in. Very few people were in. And we could have dominated this niche. When I came to him one day and said, okay, it's successful, it's time to renegotiate.
Uh-huh.
And he was very unhappy about that. And I could sense it in his voice. And I'll make a long story short by saying that he agreed to the renegotiation, but begrudgingly.
Right.
And eventually he said, I would like to take over the handling of the money. And I immediately sensed something strange about that.
Yeah.
I said, okay. And I recommended a merchant account company, and he didn't want to go with a merchant account, so we found a transaction processor. I think it was Pay Systems.
Uh-huh.
We found a Pay Systems thing, and I set it up for him. And now this is some advice for people out there. If you're going to enter into a joint venture with someone who is technical,
uh-huh.
don't ever try to... well, I don't recommend that anyone ever try to screw anybody over, but don't try to screw over somebody who's technical,
yeah.
who might have set something up on the back end. At that time, he wanted to try a marketing strategy where we sent the course to somebody just for the cost of shipping,
uh-huh.
and then we would bill them later.
Right, yeah.
And I said, that's fine. And he wanted to charge a little bit on top of the shipping.
Uh-huh.
And I had set up the back-end ordering system for him, and I had also set it up to send me an email every time an order came in. Now, when you're doing a joint venture, money is always the object of the joint venture in final terms. I mean, that's not true for everybody. Sometimes people are interested in other things, in fame and in goodwill, whatever the case may be. But money primarily is the objective. So you always want to make sure that everybody who's involved is aware. When somebody else is taking the money, like if I'm taking the money, I want my partners to be aware, so we'll send them a really detailed spreadsheet telling them how much, you know, you made and what the split was, if there were any refunds, and you know, what, you know, minus any expenses. And a lot of times people really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So this was simply done so that both of us were aware what was going on with orders. And... it was also done as a tracking mechanism, frankly, because I started to mistrust him when he wanted to change over quickly. And make a long story short, he really was not reporting sales to me.
Uh-huh.
And I would ask him, knowing full well what the answer was, how'd we do today? Oh, we really didn't do too well. We had one sale, and I knew we had 5 or 10.
Wow.
So it was becoming a bad situation.
Yeah.
And finally, I was hosting his website and everything. I was handling all of it. I just pulled the plug one day, and he called me up. It ended up in a very bad, ugly situation. I told him to keep his money, and I knew what was going on. And I said, find hosting somewhere else. You know, I'd prefer that you don't take the website sales letter, but I seem to think that you will. And he claimed that it was his content on there. Whatever. It ended up in a really ugly situation, and money was lost out of it, and we dissolved the partnership.
So was the main problem in that situation then, other than he was obviously a dishonest person, but the main problem was that you weren't actually controlling the funds at the end?
You know what? I think you hit it on the head the first time. I think it was that he was a dishonest person. I have joint ventures where other people control the funds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with that as long as I can trust them, as long as we both have tracking mechanisms. But I don't think that you can ever enter into a joint venture with someone who's ever exhibited signs of dishonesty.
Yeah.
And if you do, you know, as they say, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware.
Right. Yeah.
You may get something that you weren't expecting, or that maybe you were expecting.
So that's a good example of one that flopped because of a dishonest person. Did anything flop because of maybe technical reasons or something other than a partner being dishonest?
Yeah, another joint venture I had was similar to what we were just talking about, where I had a young partner, a customer of mine who came to me who had a great idea for some software, and he was a really smart software architect.
Uh-huh.
And what a software architect does, if people don't know, is someone who they basically tell you how the design of software should be, how it should flow, what it should do, but they don't necessarily do the programming or the coding to make it work.
Right.
They kind of draft out the plans like a regular architect would do and then give it to someone else. Let's think of the programmer as a builder, as the actual construction worker. And the architect, the software architect, is the guy who's mapped out what should happen and what the end result should be. This young person had... contacted me, said he wanted to work with me. I loved his idea. He didn't have the resources in place to produce this, so I offered up my programmers, and we agreed to cover the cost 50-50 of the programming and the development.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a very busy person. And when you're dealing with a joint venture partner who's a very busy person, you have to understand that, you know, the time that you're allotted with them may be small, but you should make the most of it.
Exactly, yeah.
So what started to happen was I was traveling back and forth. At that time, I had moved to Florida, and this was last year, and I recently moved back to New York. But he was calling me while I was on vacation, while I was running my seminar in Las Vegas, while I was on a trip to New York. I mean, he was calling me all over, and I said, listen, I just don't have the time right now to devote 100% of my effort to this.
Right.
And it started to really get, I started to sense a lot of resentment that I wasn't putting what he felt was 100% effort.
Right.
But again, a joint venture, as I talked